Jeremiah 23, God says, is not my word like fire, like a hammer that breaks a rock in pieces? He broke through the walls of Jericho. He broke through the bars of Paul's jail cell. He broke through the chains of sin and death. Do you not think he can handle your problems? Only those who have embraced brokenness can be rebuilt into his image.
Welcome to The Broken Life, a ministry of Maddie Montgomery, offering practical and biblical truth to better equip and inspire revolutionary faith and establish the real King as the real answer to real issues.
As I've seen it and heard it preached, and as I've read in Scripture, there is an office that is consistently referred to, and that is the office of a watchman or a watcher. You know, I see it brought up by God on a number of occasions. I see it brought up by men of God on a number of occasions. And as I began to seek the Lord on what exactly that meant and what were some of the practical applications of being effective and being faithful and being disciplined in that office, he began to speak to me about what it really meant to watch on behalf of the kingdom and on behalf of yourself. And the first thing that God brought me to was in Isaiah chapter 62, verses 6 and 7. Which say, I have posted watchmen on your walls, Jerusalem. And in this moment, God is speaking to Jerusalem, the nation, but there's also a sort of foreshadowing of what the church would be, meaning that Jerusalem in this moment is representative of the church in our time right now. And so he says, I have posted watchmen on your walls, Jerusalem. They will never be silent day or night. You who call on the Lord, give yourselves no rest and give him no rest until he establishes Jerusalem and makes her the praise of the earth. And then I saw it come up again because I felt like, you know, maybe historically that was just a role that was fulfilled by someone that would sit on the walls of a kingdom and would watch for coming attacks and then would like sound the trumpet to help defend the city against these impending attacks. But I noticed that it came up again. The same word was used again in John chapter 10 when Jesus says, the man who enters by the gate is the shepherd of his sheep. And in this moment, Jesus is talking about himself. And then he says, the watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And so as I begin to see that there's both an old covenant or an Old Testament and a new covenant or a New Testament meaning of this word watchman, and the both of them have a few things in common, I began to really understand what it meant and what it is to fill this role. And that is that a watchman is someone that sees someone or something coming and discerns whether or not that thing will be beneficial to be let in. And I see such a tremendous practical application for that office in our church right now. Man, in a church that often looks more like a nightclub than it does the house of God. In a church in which pastors look more like comedians or politicians than they do Jesus, I see such a tremendous and desperate need for real watchmen on the walls of Jerusalem, right? People that will stand at the gate, and when they see the shepherd coming, when they see Jesus coming, to kick down the gate and do whatever it takes to just invite him in, because the sheep need him, right? And so, man, I don't believe that there is one single Christ follower who is not called to some extent to be a watchman. I believe that this is an office to which we are all appointed, in an office with which we have all been entrusted, that God has said, you are the guardians of my glory in the earth. I'm going to place my glory in this church. I'm going to entrust the gospel to my church. And you are going to guard the integrity of that establishment as watchmen. And yet I feel like this is an office that is often attacked. What do you think is the single most important and vital instrument that a watchman has? Think about it. I think the single most important and vital instrument or weapon that a watchman has and is able to institute are his eyes. His ability to see, his vision is something that cannot get clouded, not only for his own sake, but for the sake of the kingdom that he's defending. And so I think that it's an absolutely strategic and intentional attack of the enemy to come after the eyes of the church. He's not coming after men convincing them to commit adultery or murder. He's coming after men convincing them that it's okay to look after that girl on TV. He's coming after men convincing them that it's not a big deal if they look at pornography a few times a week. He's coming after people that are supposed to be watchmen for the church, and he's convincing them that it's okay if they look elsewhere. But if they're not looking, if their eyes aren't clear and focused on the task at hand, they're going to miss the attack that's coming. And then adultery is not going to seem so impossible anymore. And murder is not going to seem so impossible anymore, simply because the ones that were supposed to see it coming were looking away. Get that, for real. I think that if the enemy can get our eyes diverted, whether it ever leads us into sin or not, if he can simply get us looking away, then he's got us away from our post, and he can attack freely, and no one will ever see it coming. And we've seen church after church, pastor after pastor, marriage after marriage, deteriorate, fall apart, get overwhelmed by sin and temptation simply because people were not watching when they should have been. Man, I see this sin played out so tangibly in the life of David. Now, David was called a man after God's own heart, right? David had such a tremendous and intimate relationship with God that he almost became like a model for what the church would become. Right? A model of a man that can worship God, and a man that can fight with God. A man that can convey the heart of God to people, and a man that can convey the heart of man to God. A man that stood in between the natural and the divine. He was exactly what the church was intended to be. And yet, this man fell into deep and incredible sin. This man was guilty of murder. He was guilty of adultery. And yet, it didn't start there. I mean, read the story about David sleeping with this woman, Bathsheba. It says that, and it's in 2 Samuel chapter 11, it says, in the spring, in the time when kings go off to war, David stayed in Jerusalem, and he sent Joab and his servants with him, and all Israel, and they destroyed the people of Ammon and besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem. Then it happened one evening that David arose from his bed and walked on the roof of the king's house. And from the roof he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful to behold. So David sent and inquired about the woman, and someone said, "Is that not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" Then David sent messengers and took her, and she came to him, and he lay with her, for she was cleansed from her impurity, and she returned to her house. And the woman conceived, so she sent and told David, "I am with child." Now, as the story plays out, what happens is that David panics a little bit, and he sends this woman's husband to the front lines of war, where the fighting is the most fierce, and he winds up getting killed. And then he takes this woman, Bathsheba, as his own wife. And ultimately this child that they had conceived ends up dying. And it's such a crazy story, because I don't think that there's anyone that would ever say, I don't think there's anyone that would ever say that they set out to become a murderer. Nobody is ever going to be like desperately and passionately pursuing the face of God, and then one day wake up and say, "I want to kill someone." Or even there's no man of God that's going to say, "I want to sleep with another man's wife." And yet these are things that David did. But his first sin was not adultery. His first sin was not murder. His first sin was the fact that he took his eyes away from the task that God had given him. Let's go back to the way this starts. The very first verse in this story says, in the spring, in the time when kings go off to war, David stayed in Jerusalem. David was the king of Israel at this time. This was his time to be at war, and yet he stayed in Jerusalem and sent a man named Joab to do his job. Man, he didn't say that he was going to stay in Jerusalem so that he could sleep with Uriah the Hittite's wife and then murder him and take her to be his own wife. No, the reason that he stayed in Jerusalem was simply because he'd diverted his eyes. He'd taken his attention, his focus, off of the task at hand. And because of that, this attack was able to come in, and he didn't even see it coming. I see this so tremendously in the lives of church people. That, man, none of us would ever cheat on our wives. Man, none of us would ever steal funds from the church offering plate, right? But it never starts there, does it? It starts with simply losing focus on the fact that God has called you to, in every moment, choose to love your wife unconditionally. It starts with losing sight of the fact that God has called you to be faithful in every single area of your life, both natural, financial, economic, social, cultural, religious, spiritual, etc. And that if we lose track, if we lose focus, if our eyes are turned away, we are no longer effective watchmen, and attacks are able to come on us and our kingdom simply because we're not watching and we're not doing our job. So it wasn't perversion or a sinful heart that put David in that situation. It was his laziness and his apathy. His intent wasn't to murder or to lie or to cheat or to steal this man's wife. It was simply to look at this woman. He was on the roof and he saw a woman that was beautiful to behold, and he just looked at her. And that was it. And then he didn't say, I want to sleep with this woman. He just went to someone else and inquired about her. Who is this woman that I saw? And then that woman said, well, she's Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. And then he just had her come to his house. No big deal, right? It's not like he's sinning or anything. And then he sleeps with this woman, and then it gets serious, right? But he sends her home, and it's no big deal, and maybe they're never going to talk again. But then he hears word that she had conceived his child. And then suddenly, his secret sin had spawned a public consequence, and he had to deal with it. And instead of dealing with it by confession, he dealt with it through murder. And it was never a very big step. But Satan simply got him looking away. And that was enough to be able to take him one step at a time from laziness to lust to adultery to murder. He got ambushed by sin. Not because he wanted it, or he asked for it, or he went looking for it, but because he wasn't watching. Because there was something that he was supposed to be doing, and he wasn't seeing it. His eyes were not focused and alert. He was supposed to be a watchman at this moment for his kingdom. He was supposed to be a defender of God's people. And if we are functioning appropriately in our role as watchmen, there is no time for sin. There's no desire to sin. There's no temptation that can overcome us. So our commission is not to live our lives avoiding sin. Our commission is to live our lives focused and alert on the call and the task that God has given us. But we must make up our mind right now in this moment to watch before temptation comes, before the attack comes. Before there's an army coming at us, before we're in a situation in which adultery or murder are placed before us. We have to watch when things are good. We have to watch when things are bad. And every moment we have to watch. This is why Jesus says to Peter in Matthew 26, he says, watch and pray lest you enter into temptation. Because he understood this. That even before temptation is presented, if we are watching, then when temptation comes, we can see it from a mile away. And we know exactly how to handle it. But if we allow our eyes to get diverted, if we allow our focus to get turned away, we're going to miss it and temptation's going to hit us like a ton of bricks and we'll never know it was coming. So I echo the words of our Savior and King Jesus to you. Avoid the pitfalls of David. Avoid the pitfalls of some of our pastors and our teachers and our fathers. And right now, make up your mind to watch and pray lest you enter into temptation.
Thank you for joining us for this broadcast of The Broken Life. For more information about Matty Montgomery or his ministries, or to download a free copy of this message, please visit www.mattymontgomery.com. We'll be right back.